Ahoy, authors! You're listening to the Writership Podcast, a show focused on helping indie authors master self-editing skills. So come aboard and get ready to find the treasure in your manuscript with hosts Leslie Watts and Clark Chamberlain.
Welcome to episode 94 of the Writership Podcast. I'm Leslie Watts, here with Clark Chamberlain from the Book Editor Show. If you want to learn more about the Writership Podcast, you can visit the website at writership.com/podcast.
As you know, the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Author Marketing Club, home of the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber Tool. You know you need high-quality reviews for your books, so you should use the AMC Reviewer Grabber Tool to quickly and easily locate reviewers that are ready, willing, and able to review your books for you. Become a premium member of AMC now by visiting www.authormarketingclub.com and get instant access to this tool and more.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, how's it going, Leslie?
It's going.
I think it's the first time I've ever slipped up on the ad read there.
Oh, I didn't even notice. 2017 marches on, right?
It does.
In spectacular fashion. Hey, last month we did a birthday giveaway.
Oh yeah, for your birthday.
Yes. And people wrote reviews, and then we took everybody who sent a screenshot of their review to us that we chose at random. I'm struggling with my words this morning. All right, so let me start again. Anyway, we selected the winner of the birthday giveaway in a random drawing from everyone who sent in an entry. And the winner is Aisha Depay. So the nice. Four, yeah, congratulations. The four books she won are two of my favorites and two of Clark's favorites: The Story Grid, Story Genius, Writing the Breakout Novel, and Making Shapely Fiction. So thanks so much to everyone who left a review. And Aisha, those books are on their way to you.
That's so cool. You know, it's going to be a lot for her to read, but every one of those is fantastic. And up your writing game.
Yeah. I love books. Yay.
I know. We were talking off air about, so I went down to the LTUE, Life, the Universe, and Everything. It's this writer's conference that has just continued to grow after these last couple of decades down in Utah. I think there was about 1,400 people there this year. And so much stuff, so much to learn. And I was just blown away by this one particular instructor talking about oral story traditions and I just love that mythology and religion type idea, and like back when we stopped, or back before we were even writing, you know. And so it's there's just such good stuff to learn out there, and it can really be impressing to add that to your writing toolkit.
Yeah, I find that I had the same experience when I went to the Story Grid workshop, that there were so many new things, just different levels of story and things to consider, that it really, well, it made my mind very sparkly and happy. So
yeah, I came back from the conference and actually sat down, and because it's been a while since I've touched any of my fiction work, you know, I've been working so much on nonfiction, working so much on editing and the shows and things, and it's inspiring. It gets you really excited and energized to work on your own stuff again, which is awesome. And but yeah, I mean, this is I think that's the greatest thing about an art, you know, whether you paint or you write or, you know, you compose music. It is continually learning, continually growing. You know, you're always adding new things and picking up from people that are ahead of you, because there's always going to be people ahead of you, you know, that are further along on this path, on this artistic path.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have a quote for us from someone who's pretty far along on
also far along on his own path. the author of writing the breakout novel, Donald Moss, is the quote of the week. And this is actually from his book, Writing 21st Century Fiction. And the quote is, "The secret of standout characters is their uniqueness. It can be developed in any number of ways, from their appearance to their opinions. Principles, perplexing quirks, and inner puzzles all can help, but too often are shortcuts and substitutes for the harder work of building a standout character from the ground up."
Yeah. I feel kind of, it's so clear, and that the things that we, you know, the qualities and the different characteristics we imbue our characters with should be intentional and be, you know, help to make the characters really full and fleshed out and as close to real people without being, you know, without falling into stereotype we can with them, and not in like quirks because the quirk is kind of interesting doesn't really add to the story or the character. It's more like who is this person as a whole.
The comedy Seinfeld that was on during the 90s has a character, Kramer, who's, you know, it's really humorous and busts in all the time and does silly, crazy things, really quirky. And he was kind of just this stereotype comic relief character for a little while. But then as the show continued and grew, and like you're having more episodes where it gets more into him, you know, and you're learning all these weird things about him, like, so then it becomes part of his core character development throughout the entire show. And had he just been this guy with funny hair and wore, you know, old clothes and slid in on his shoes type of thing, which he does when he comes flying in, like, if that's all he did, that's not enough. You know, just giving the character a funny hat doesn't make them unique. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. All right, well, let's dive into the mm-hmm. this week's submission. We have Edge of the Future, which is by Andrea Stone. It's a science fiction novel. The ultimate word count will be about 75,000 to 80,000. This is the first chapter, and there's a little adult language, I think, if I recall correctly, in this. So, Clark, would you like to read this for us?
Yes, absolutely. Edge of the Future, Chapter 1. The emergency warning siren blared from every comm system throughout the entire research facility. Lights dimmed to a flashing red. The PA system crackled with static, then announced, "This is not a drill. The Camry facility is under attack. All systems are under full security lockdown. Shelter in place." Captain Mark Warren froze for a moment. Looking up from his microscope, he scanned the room for his lab partner. She wasn't there. He didn't remember Dr. Coltler saying where she was going either. Mark had been so absorbed in his experiment, he hadn't paid any attention. He instinctively rushed to the door of their small XB laboratory and tried to twist the knob. Nope, not opening. Damn. He hurried to the desk and checked the vid screen for information. Black nothingness. He grabbed his tablet and checked for data. Dead. He tapped his earpiece for any voice message. Silence. The headache-inducing siren stopped, except for the red warning lights continued to flash. Mark rapidly searched through the cabinets for anything useful. He found a med kit, a fire extinguisher, but not so much as a box cutter to defend himself. And if someone wanted to hide, there wasn't even a closet. All hell broke loose. Mark flinched at the sound of automatic weapons fire coming from several different locations. An explosion ripped through the air. The whole room shuddered. Shit, shit, shit. Mark found the darkest corner in his small lab and hunkered down to wait for the end. Oh, hell. He should have stayed in Portland. Nothing ever happened in Portland. Or any one of a dozen different places he'd been. Or Paris. Yes, Paris. With Simone. Now only a memory. long-distance relationships with beautiful French women are short-lived. Instead, he'd let the Terran military recruit him, then snooker him into a tour in the isolated Canadian wilderness, all for the sake of research. If it hadn't been for his love of science, he remembered a rumor about some fanatics. A faction of global anti-technology extremists had been vocal lately, made threats. Today they were making good on those threats with bombs and guns. Mark wondered, where were the soldiers that were supposed to be guarding this place? The Terran military troop transport ship hovered scant inches above a cold North Dakota spaceport tarmac. While the tactical assault group boarded, Sergeant Alex von Radek was the last to jump through the airlock hatch. He headed straight for the pilot's cabin. He knew the drill. Axel rapped on the bulkhead and poked his head inside to confirm the coordinates. He recognized the call signs emblazoned in red on both their helmets. Axel loved female pilots. "Well, hello, ladies. We having lunch in Canada this afternoon?" To his left, Boss Lady continued tapping the screens on her flight control and purred. "Affirmative. Don't worry your pretty little head, Sergeant. We'll be there before you know it." She tossed him a look over her shoulder, winked, and puckered her lips. In the nav seat, Tiger Lily flashed him a smile. They exchanged a thumbs up. She tapped the ship's comm and announced, "Okay, people, harness up. 10 seconds to liftoff." Alex hastily backed out, slid around the bulkhead into the nearest empty harness station, and strapped himself to the hull. As they became airborne, the interior lighting switched to deep blue, the color matched in the twin light strips on the floor. Today, their transport held one platoon of 30 soldiers, mostly men, with some women, all with buzz cuts or shaved heads. Each outfitted in urban gray tactical combat armor, gear, pulse weapons. They were divided into two squads, sitting opposite each other. Lieutenant Monroe always positioned himself in the middle, facing the hatch. Inside his helmet, Monroe's mouth moved and his head bobbed, obviously conversing with HQ. Sergeant Russo of Bravo Squad sat centered along the back, updating his people in subdued tones. Von Radek calmed his squad. "Listen up. Terrorists have attacked Camry, a joint Canadian-American military research installation outside Churchill, Manitoba. We received an alert when their systems went offline. An unknown number of heavily armed militants have been on site now for 15 minutes. Camry's on-site forces have gone dark, so we have no news on casualties or damages. Our orders are to eliminate any and all threats. We knew this was a military research installation, but now suspect it may house classified biomaterials. I say again, classified biomaterials. Use extreme caution in any laboratory areas. I do not want anyone bringing back a deadly pathogen. Am I clear?" In unison, 14 hushed voices responded, "Yes, sir." Alex continued, "They're dropping us onto the roof. The structure is 2 levels of 24 laboratories each. We'll split up right and left. Sweep it from the top down. Bravo Squad is taking the ground floor." Axel grinned. "Neutralize all the bad guys. Not any of them. Not any of the good guys. And do not go blowing holes in things for the fun of it, unless you want them to bill us for the damages." Again, 14 hushed voices responded, "Yes, sir." A female voice warned over the ship's comm, "Okay, people, lock and load, hot LZ in 20 seconds. A massive explosion detonated somewhere close in the corridor outside Mark's lab, followed by weapons fire, yelling and screaming. Silence. Mark got to his feet, feeling that fight or flight surge through his body. He stared at the door handle as it began to glow red hot. A force hit the door. It burst open. An armored soldier erupted into the room. He looked straight at Mark, turned to drag a wounded soldier. Both their helmets had red TMD insignias. "Who are you?" The soldier's helmet turned his voice into a raspy growl. "Captain Mark Warren, Terran Military, Exobiology Research and Development, out of Aberdeen, Maryland." "Good, you can help me." He handed the wounded soldier's pistol to Mark. "Guard the door." He pulled a packet from a hidden seam on his bicep, tore off the wrapper, dropped to one knee next to the injured soldier, and jabbed him inside the thigh with a syringe. Mark backed up against the wall, aiming the gun at the door. "Okay, now who are you?" "On the cavalry, come to save you lab rats." The armored soldier lifted his mirrored faceplate, stood, and offered a cocky smile. "Sergeant Alex von Radek, Tactical Assault Group, TMD, North American Command." Ah, oh, crap. An adrenaline junkie. Mark nodded at the man on the floor. "Is he going to be okay? And what's happening out there? I've been locked in here since the alarms went off. And where's our security?" "His suit will seal the wound, but in case it's internal, we need to get him out of here soon. Some terrorists are trying to blow your house down and kill you." Voices could be heard coming from the corridor. They grew increasingly louder. Von Radek pressed a finger to his lips, cradled his rifle, peeked around the door. "Stay here. Take care of Scarlatti," he whispered, closed his faceplate, slid into the hallway. Mark grabbed a strap on the wounded soldier's vest and pulled him into the furthestmost corner. He noticed the blackened scorch marks on his armor, peeled back a glove, checked for a pulse. Good. Still alive. A rapid burst of fire startled Mark. He seized the gun, faced the door. Presently a voice said, "Don't shoot, Captain. I'm coming in," the sergeant gingerly said.
Okay. That's the end of our submission for today. I think that this is a pretty well done scene with where we're, you know, we're introduced to these two men, and we get a glimpse of the world that Mark inhabits, though it changes, you know, it changes from the first word. So we're not looking at necessarily what it looks, you know, what it would normally look like on a normal day. But I get the feeling that we are seeing Axel von Radek's normal life. Like, this is how he rolls, and that's his normal environment. So we have two men, one who is decidedly out of his environment and one who's in his environment, which is an interesting contrast and a nice opening for the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And you can tell, you know, it's got a lot of action. We're moving quickly from place to place. We're getting snippets of characters and kind of getting to know the terrain a little bit of where things are at. But yeah, we don't get a moment where we see Captain Mark Warren, who's the scientist. We don't get to see, you know, what the daily routine is in this Canadian northern place. Definitely, you know, like in his mind, he's thinking that he should have gone somewhere else, which I can't blame him. You know, if you're getting attacked in a bio facility.
Yeah. It's not how you would choose to spend your day.
Yeah, exactly. So, and what you notice pretty quickly here, and I think, you know, and you know, we take a look back at the quote, we see that Axel, the sergeant, is certainly like he has a lot of character, he has a lot of flair, right there. He's big, he's bold. You can see that, and we don't get as much. You know, he's more subdued. The scientist is, and which could be his character, but again, what we're not seeing here is a particularly large contrast in their own environments to know that that's how they are normally.
Right, right. There is point by point. The when Axel is, you know, when we meet him, he is interacting with his colleagues on the ship, right? And there's some flirty banter between him and Boss Lady and Tiger Lily. And you had a point when we were talking about this earlier about how we're not sure if this is normal for this group of people. Like, his behavior is considered acceptable, or if it's over the top, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Since we only see his interaction with the pilots, we don't have a baseline. We don't have a contrasting opinion to know whether or not, is this how everybody treats the female pilots? Is this just what he does to the female pilots? Is it how the female pilots just act back, because both of them seem to respond exactly the same. So maybe that's how all female pilots are in this world. Like, and it, I know this kind of stuff can sound, well, you know, a little silly sometimes, but really this is how we establish if we're going to be in a future world, if we're going to be in a new place, the reader needs to know what normal is, and they need to have that so that they can contrast when the story is changing. And also that normal for that world, you know, normal for that place and time, so that they aren't necessarily judging people the wrong way if this is in everybody's normal behavior. Had this not been, right, you know, like maybe he's just a little bit too, he's that guy, you know, that's this way down the hall in high school type of thing. And we need to have an authority figure, you know, tell him, hey, knock it off. You know, we need to have the lieutenant, hey, stop flirting and get your ass in the seat. We have to take off. Like, we need to have somebody, you know, that's reminding us of what his normal is in this world.
Right. That, yeah. So I think this doesn't require a whole extra scene or a whole extra set piece in the, you know, within the scene, that you can do this with a, you know, with a line of dialogue or somebody's disapproving look or some, you know, some kind of small gesture or something that indicates, whoa, buddy, that's over the line, or, oh, that's so funny, you know. Or,
right. So, because we see, like, we've got Boss Lady and Tiger Lily, and mm-hmm. they seem to be, like, are they smitten by him? You know, he's, like, just this really playful guy, and so they like this. Then we would need to have someone else come in and give us the baseline. Now, if his behavior is inappropriate, all we would have needed to do is have Tiger Lily roll her eyes or do something else, you know, that kind of gives says, hey, this isn't cool. Why do you keep doing this? So.
Right. I think that, yeah, and these are picky points. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's not surface level stuff. Like, this is like once you're getting kind of deeper into character and tweaking the finer points to reveal things. So I think, for the most part, Axel is, his character is revealed more, what's the word I'm looking for? We're both having trouble finding these words today. That we can see him more clearly than we can see Mark.
Mm-hmm. Right. We do get a very real sense of who the sergeant is, who Axel is at all times. You know, he seems to be the same all the way through. When he finally reaches Mark, you know, he's still kind of just tossing out this personality. You know, hey, we're the people here to make sure you don't get killed. You know, some terrorists are trying to blow your house down and kill you, you know. Like, he's just kind of just, yeah, there it is, toss it out. And so we really do get to see exactly who he is throughout the deal. And again, yeah, this is some nitpicky stuff. This is not, and I don't want this to come off as saying that I'm like, oh my goodness, this is such a sexist scene in this moment. Because that's not what I'm saying here. What I'm actually saying is, we're in a future world. We need to know what normal is in this future world. And these little tiny interactions, which don't seem like very much, are actually what's going to give the reader that baseline for normal in this world.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, and it, as you say, it's not a big, it doesn't have to be a big and obvious thing. It can be fairly subtle. So when we look at the kinds of things that, you know, the kind of character reveals that we have in for Mark, because I'm curious about those too, because we don't have as clear a picture mm-hmm. as we do for Axel. And so I was kind of going through the piece and picking some things out that, you know, he's absorbed in the experiment. He hadn't even noticed when his fellow, you know, when his colleague left, or if she said where she was going or where she said she was going. But we also know that once the alarms go off, then, you know, he's looking for something to defend himself. So he's not just looking for a place to hide. He is being proactive, and, you know, he tried to get out first, and then and then he's looking for a way to defend himself. And then we have the interlude with his thoughts, where he kind of escapes a little to what he's thinking about. Oh, I should have stayed in Portland or anywhere. And then he remembers Paris, and then he remembers Paris with Simone. And so he's kind of, you know, his thoughts are kind of wandering in that way. So we get some nice reveals there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then, do you have one more on that one?
And then the only other thing is, like, when he is that he seems perfectly happy to let Axel be the guy in charge when, you know, when he shows up like this in this, you know, under these circumstances. He's not pulling rank and saying, well, hey, I'm the captain here. He's just like, clearly you are the qualified person in this situation. And he doesn't argue, but he does want to know who he is.
Mm-hmm. And there is some great character moments where, like you said, that he's trying to escape first. You know, I want you to take note on this one, is that you can really see how much easier it is to show character when you have another character that they are speaking with, or that you can have them contrasted to. I mean, that's why it's so good to have foils in your story, you know, that you can really see the opposites of character, and we can really understand who the character is. So when we're by ourselves here, you know, he's the captain here, Mark is by himself, we have to fall into him thinking. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, especially in an action scene like this, when I read this, I kind of am like, really? This is where his mind's going at this moment? He's going to have this really long walk down memory lane about where he should be and, like, all this other little stuff and the women and short-lived and can't believe I got pulled into this. And but if he was with a colleague, they could have been having that little back and forth conversation, like little back and forth stuff. It's like, well, you're the one who volunteered to come do this, you know, or you could have still been over there in Paris or whatever. Like, and just, like, quipped at these little things without even revealing additional information, which would set up additional mystery of what their life is like outside. And then also giving banter back and forth instead of being internal thoughts.
Yeah. I think it's often helpful to have another person just so you can have the dialogue and it's not in the head. Speaking of the internal dialogue, I was thinking, and I think you had a thought about this as well, that about the, you know, kind of the flow of it, and that, you know, of course, when we're just alone, we're in a stressful situation and we're alone, you know, our thoughts do kind of race and jump around and that kind of thing. And when we're, you know, when we're reading a story, we want to make sure that that there is a kind of natural flow to it. It doesn't have to be as direct as, you know, we would if we were writing an essay, we were trying to convince people and that kind of thing. But we have some thoughts that kind of flow, that kind of, you know, move one thing to the other. And then there's this jump from when he's thinking, oh, if it hadn't been for his love of science, wait, he remembered a rumor about some fanatics. A faction of global anti-technology extremists had been very vocal lately. And unless we have a, you know, some sort of trigger or something that cues that thought, I mean, then it almost feels like too coincidental that he's thinking that thought right then. And it doesn't, like, again, it doesn't, the mind does throw, you know, make connections between disparate events. And we do, you know, we can be thinking in the back of our mind, like, working out a problem or working out something like, who could possibly be doing this, even if we're not thinking it mm-hmm. consciously. But it's really helpful, I think, in the story to have something or some indication, like he's, you know, has a thought early on, wonder who could be behind this or what the heck is going on or that kind of thing. And then have something in the thoughts he's thinking right before the revelation that triggers that, you know, that evokes that memory of, oh, there were these fanatics. And mm-hmm. One other thing about that I was thinking is that he seems really certain. Like, he doesn't have any doubt. He doesn't think, oh, well, it could be those guys. He seems very confident about the, you know, the connection that he's made. And so we don't know what he's basing that conclusion on yet. And so what I was wondering is this intentional to reveal that he makes leaps of logic or leaps of connection without feeling the need to prove it, yeah. which seems like an unscientific approach, mm-hmm. or was this just, you know, is that unintentional and maybe want to make him have, like, you know, some doubt or some, you know, express some equivocation mm-hmm. about it, even as you're planting the seed that it could be these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely the mind wonders, you know. I mean, that's why when I talk to my students about researching, you know, if you're writing, don't go to research, because you're going to jump over to check on 17th century European politics for your historical novel, and all of a sudden at the end of your research, you're looking at cat videos.
Because that's just...
Because it just goes from one thing to another thing to another yeah. thing, and you're just like, oh, I look at this and that, and then pretty soon you're just goofing off. But one of the ideas with this, and I think it would have been nice to have just this little bit more of his being absorbed in experimentation. Like mm-hmm. if we would have had the morning, if we could have just seen his morning, mm-hmm. and we could have seen him go to a briefing that morning, where they could have even mentioned, but he's like totally thinking in his mind about the experiment. They could have actually mentioned just briefly some initials of some global anti-technology extremist thing. Mm-hmm. Could have mentioned that just briefly. Could have gone in there. Could have been so absorbed that the alarm is going off and his partner leaves. And then he realizes the alarm is off and he's like, where did everybody go? You know, that we could see him as being this really absorbed scientist in what he's doing. And then he then recalls, oh, wait, didn't we talk about that this morning? There was something about that. And then we could have the surety that we're seeing here, because I like exactly what you're saying. You know, is it without having something that a reason why he's doing that, like, how is he coming to the conclusions?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that can be it, and it might be, again, you know, we talk about often the limits of our setup here is that, you know, we don't know what comes after. We have the authors will often give us a synopsis of what happens in the rest of the story, but you don't always know what's going to be revealed immediately after. It might be that, oh, he did attend a briefing of some sort, and he was like, oh, you know, like they had kind of been expecting something like this or something like that, but we don't know in that moment, and so he seems very very certain of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when the story is pretty well put together, when we're nitpicking all this stuff.
I know. I wanted to say that. Yeah, I definitely wanted to make the point that these are really nitpicky things, and that it's a solid opening mm-hmm. as written. So
it really is. And one of the things I want to mention that's not necessarily character, like directly character, it's like secondary character building. Mm-hmm. So when I was down at the writers' conference, one of the panels that I was speaking on was about military culture. And so when you set this into a future and you're really kind of creating your own little military, you know, because this is a joint Canadian-American military deal, the strike force. So you kind of get to make up some stuff on your own. But you still want to pull that from like the way the regular military works, one of the branches, mm-hmm. you know? And so like the idea of 14 hushed voices, you know, like are they hushed? Because in the military, nothing's hushed. Like everyone's yelling all the time, you know? And like in the Army, we would never call a sergeant a sir, but mm-hmm. they do in the Marines. So okay. like, yeah, you know, so you want to make sure that the military group that you're putting together, that you have clear of what it is that they look like, but also being based slightly in some other type of real life military that's already there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I find the culture in the different branches of the service and then in different countries, I find it really interesting. So I love it when we get to see those little details within mm-hmm. a story and how it just adds color.
Yeah. And it was so much fun being on that panel because there was everyone from different branches, except for the Coast Guard, because that's really not a branch.
Hey, now.
Sorry for all those Coast Guard.
They're doing good work in the world. Mm-hmm. but yeah, I come from, I know the, my family, all the men from my father's generation and back were, you know, in one branch of service or another. And so it's really interesting to talk to them and hear their stories and then my own experience with my dad being in the military for so long. Yeah. Anyway, I'm wandering off, much like Captain Warren did. So, or is he lieutenant? Okay, I'm getting.
He was a captain.
Okay.
So you're good. So, that was all I had on this one. That, like we were just saying, though, I mean, it's really well put together. You know, the story flows really quickly and seems to still hit everything that it needs to. So, yeah. Some good stuff here.
Yeah. So. I have an editorial mission for us.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Thanks. This one is called Unique Characters. What I would like you to do is to make a list of all the major characters in your story and then identify the qualities that make them unique. What makes them special? You know, everybody has, or all humans have certain things in common, but what is it about this particular person that is, you know, that is different from everyone else? And then I want you to look at, how are you showing this in the story? How are you revealing those differences? And, you know, and are there ways that you could amp that up or ways that you could reveal some other, you know, some other aspect of character or some, or, you know, or are you doing it too much and do you need to ramp down? Are there, you know, quirks and that kind of thing, or are you revealing, you know, qualities that make this character three-dimensional? So, yeah, so that's your mission for this week. And I want to remind you that if you go to writership.com/episodes, you can sign up to get the editorial missions delivered to your inbox. If you listen to the podcast while you're on the go, this is a great solution because it's hard to write down the mission when you're walking or cycling or driving. So, and don't do that. So yeah, so get over to writership.com/episodes to sign up and get those delivered directly to you.
And the Writership Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at the Author Marketing Club, which you can find at www.authormarketingclub.com. Don't forget, when you become a premium member today, you'll gain access to the new and improved Amazon Reviewer Grabber tool.
Okay, and before we go, if you enjoy the show, if you're getting a lot out of it, please leave us a rating and review, like the good folks who entered the birthday contest, on iTunes or Stitcher. If you want to have your 5 pages reviewed, please visit us at writership.com/submissions. And finally, be sure to check out the Book Editor Show, which Clark hosts with Peter Turley. That's it for episode 94. We'll see you next time on the Writership Podcast.
Ready for Leslie and Clark to help you find the treasure in your manuscript? Submit your pages to writership.org/podcast.